Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for February 15th, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson, here on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio. You can always follow us at thedailyagenda.com. Please subscribe to this if you're listening to it on a podcast. That'd be great. We try to do it weekly. I'm also with Vinita Sakar Monday through Thursday at 6:20 on WCCO, with a preview of today's politics in the upper Midwest and Minnesota. Well, we jump from one fire into the frying pan, and that was news this past week that Border Czar Tom Homan said that Operation Metro Surge would wind down. And now Tuesday, we start a legislative session that is as loaded with emotion and politics as you could ever imagine. During this past week, we kind of started to see some of the dynamics of the 2026 election come more into form with fundraising reports, the caucuses a week ago, but then really what can get done this session? That's the big question. It's supposed to be a bonding session. You have a ton of retirements, and you have the federal government getting ready to shut down again. And obviously, the impact of the federal cuts on Minnesota will be a major subject of the legislative session, as will, of course, fraud be that focus. But as I mentioned last week, we are going to begin to explore some of the bigger issues of our state as we go through 2026. You know, we started the year with Governor Walz dropping out, the killing of Renee Good and Alex Pretty, and really quite an intense first 6 weeks of the year. So I think it's good to step back and really look at some of the issues that we cover at Fluence. Last week, healthcare and HCMC. This week, we're going to lean in on farm policy, ag policy. There's a task force that in Congress laid out the outline for a national standard of E15. That helps farmers have a new market when they are going out with either soybeans or corn for fuel. Eight states in the Midwest have a vibrant E15 market. This would expand it nationally and allow cleaner fuels to get out into the country. Our guest is Representative Michelle Fischbach. We'll ask her what she thought of ICE and Homeland Security. We'll also talk about her role and ways and means and what it means for spending. And then we'll talk to Richard Severson, Swede. He's a farmer in Western Minnesota. He's been a visitor on the show. He'll talk about how important E15 could be to Minnesota's corn growers. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take. When we come back, Richard Swede Severson. He'll talk about ag, the importance of farms in Western Minnesota. What's the mood of ag today? And what could this national standard mean for E15? We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sunday Take. As I mentioned in the open, we're really focused on issues for the next few shows because we've talked about news, but really, as we get through 2026, there are big issues that the state of Minnesota, the federal government, and sectors of our economy have to be aware of and address. And one of those is E15, biofuels, the biofuel economy, what it means to our ag sector, how ag looks right now after a bumper crop, but not great markets and not great prices. So joining me now, Richard Severson, a longtime leader in Minnesota Corn Growers Association. We call you Swede. So Swede, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Blois. You always do a great job handling ag and issues, and I read your newsletters religiously.
Well, you don't have to say that to be on the show, but I appreciate it. You were just talking off air that you got lambs, you got baby lambs. What's the state of the farm right now? What's the mood of Western Minnesota?
Well, I think the mood is cautious, maybe at best. My son and I farm together, and we work with an adult farm manager, advisor, and I think he's aged 5 years this winter season. He said, and when we had our sit down with him, his phone was ringing off the hook. People getting asked for more collateral, people getting denied credit, people having to choose, make hard choices, maybe liquidate assets, maybe downsize, maybe turn down opportunities. But there's just there is a tension and electricity, I think, going through the ag community. We're optimistic people by nature, or we wouldn't put seed in the ground. But I think there's just a lot of tension, and there's the very real note background that if things don't improve somewhat, some of us won't be, some of our neighbors will be gone next year.
When you say improve, I think the dynamics that we've outlined here, we do during our forums, we do from Farm Fest. Last year was one of those years that it was a bumper crop, truly a bumper crop, but the markets weren't there. Where's your mindset on markets for corn? How much certainty is there without the volatility of prices? Where do you think the opportunities are for the market for corn in the coming months and years?
Oh, I think for corn, you led off with E15. Ethanol has been just a big demand driver for corn. And corn is a unique crop. It can be made into so many different things, but it's well suited to capture solar energy and rain and carbon dioxide out of the air and make a product that we can store and manufacture a high quality liquid fuel out of. And that's where we have been pushing. I've been working on E15 for 10 years as an advocate for this industry. And every time we get to the goal line, there's Lucy holding the football out for us again, and we take another swing at it. We lost. We fell on our back again in January when it didn't get attached to the omnibus bill. But we have availability of E15 in Minnesota year round because of the governor's petition. And yet, Minnesota and the upper Midwest states that have approved it, the eight states, were not the big bulk of the market in this country. And if we could get E15 as regular gas, like E10 is regular gas in almost every market in the country, we could add demand for 2 billion bushels of corn a year. And that would be enormous, given the large carryout we have this year, and the trend line yields. Farmers improve the yield of corn about 2 bushels every year on average. It's an upsloping line. And so not only do we need to handle this year's bumper crop, we need to prepare for crops that are coming and getting larger in the future.
So I think it's a really important, Swede, that you pointed out that Minnesotans are used to E15. There's eight states that have it permanent, and yet the market for it could include, another 42 plus states where fuel is consumed at higher rates. Think Texas, think California, New York, all those kinds of places are. Is the infrastructure out there to deliver E15? Is that part of how to get ready for a national E15 mandate?
Well, I don't think anybody's talking about a mandate. I
No,
think
I know. Yeah, that was my word, not yours. I'm saying availability.
the availability. Minnesota has been way ahead of that curve too on getting infrastructure updated. Minnesota corn growers gave $1 million of our checkoff dollars to the Department of Ag to kickstart them into the grant program that they've been doing with stations. One of the things in the negotiations that have been going on around E15 would be a compatibility component which would say that a pump that's certified for E10 should be able to pump E15 without any modification. Most of the tanks in Minnesota are already compatible with E100. They're just made that way now. But some of the above ground infrastructure will need updating. And as you mentioned, other states aren't as far along that path as we are. So that's why I think the compatibility issue is probably one of the things, the big pieces of getting this, as we try to get this issue over the goal line again, is to get compatibility as part of that, so that places where we haven't been working on this for a long time can just say, oh, we can pump this. And the other thing I want to bring up too is, even in Minnesota, where it's been approved, if you go to a pump at certain times of the year, you're going to see a warning label that says for use in flex fuel vehicles only. And one of the things we need to do is that makes people hesitate to use it. They think it might hurt their car or something. You know, E15's been approved for every vehicle from 2001 on. And places like Brazil are running 27% E27 in the same cars and trucks we have in this country. And so I think there's lots of upside for this for the fuel. And then so I'm also on the board of directors of our local ethanol plant out here in western Minnesota, and we have 50 really good jobs in that plant. You know, if we got E15, we could probably see in order to market the gallons we'd need for E15, we'd have to expand or build some new ones. And I think that's a great economic development story for Minnesota too. The potential is there.
Do you think, I mean, after the startup, the innovation out of Minnesota, the innovation out of the Midwest on E15, that the rest of the country is going to benefit from the years of pushing this forward because of what we've learned over the last 10, 15 years?
Oh, I'd like to say that's true. You know, it seems like at every turn, the E15 doesn't take a place in the tank without displacing a little bit of petroleum. And I understand that the petroleum industry is very jealous of their market share. They wouldn't be good businessmen if they weren't. And so at every turn, we run into folks from the oil industry saying we're going to damage them, and yet it seems like they still turn in great quarterly earnings reports every quarter. So there's a, but yeah, I do believe that we've got a model for grant programs. We've got a model for what really needs to happen with infrastructure, permitting, and that those kind of things. We've been through all of those fights, and we could be a template for other states to use.
My guest is Richard Severson. We refer to him as Swede. He's a farmer in Western Minnesota. As Congress is getting this teed up, there's a skinny farm bill. We're going to have the E15 recommendations. What else is it that the ag economy needs or you're hoping for? We have USMCA. We have some challenging trade opportunities, trade changes, trade shifts this year. Are there any other priorities you think that while Congress is in session, it is an election year, but what we need from the feds on ag policy right now?
Oh, wow. How much time you got, boys?
Well, we got a few minutes. I mean, I could dedicate another three to six shows on this, but the listeners will be like, wait, you're really going to talk about ag all the time? Well, it feeds us and fuels us, Richard. I think I could talk about that.
So a lot of the priorities that we'd been going out to Washington and talking to our representatives about for 3, 4, 5 years got done in the One Big Beautiful Bill. Some updates to crop insurance and some improvements in the safety net. Those are big fundamental things. You know, one of the things that's causing so much financial stress in the country right now is the cost of seed, fertilizer, chemicals. And part of the reason that those things are so problematic is the concentration in those industries. And I believe that there's some movement to examine the concentration, especially in the fertilizer business. Senator Grassley is introducing a bill to study how that concentration negatively affects farmers and the small town retailers that provide us with our inputs. So I think if we could tack on another win in a skinny farm bill, I think examining concentration in the input and output side of our business would be a real win.
Well, Swede, I want to thank you for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we'll talk throughout the year, and I hope we have an early melt, a good planting season, and those lambs grow to be strong and healthy.
Thanks, Blois, and it's looking great out here today on a 48-degree February afternoon.
Sounds great. I'm Blois Olson. He's Richard Severson. When we come back, Representative Michelle Fischbach. Where are we at on this skinny farm bill? What needs to be done? And what are her reactions of the news on ICE this week? I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. My final guest this week is Representative Michelle Fischbach. And as I mentioned, and we talked to Sweet about the idea that a skinny farm bill, an E15 permanent mandate, is all good for Minnesota's ag economy. And we've talked about that a lot. But obviously, the events of the last few weeks, the news this week that there would be a wind down of federal agents' presence in Minnesota. I just want to kick off with Representative Fischbach saying, Representative A, thanks for joining me. And then B, you know, what did you reflect on these last few weeks? And what do you hope for the next few months as Minnesota kind of hopefully pulls itself out of the spotlight for a while?
Well, and first of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. And I am glad that we are moving forward. They're doing the drawdown. They're done with the Operation Metro Surge. And I think that what we need to do is we now need to come together. And I was very appreciative that Tom Homan came in, did what he needed to do to calm things down and get things under control. And I think the biggest thing for Minnesota is I hope we can get together and actually move forward and start to put those things behind us, all of that discontent behind us. So I am hopeful in the next months and weeks to come.
One of the things I want to just pull out here, because this clearly became a, administration versus Minnesota narrative. You have served in the legislature. You were the lieutenant governor. You understand behind the scenes, the relationships. You also understand, I think, the dynamic of your district and the whole state. Are there things that we in the media highlight too much of, or that get too much amplification when it comes to, there is a divide in the country, but the division or the inability to solve problems that you think, if people would just do X, Y, Z, we could solve more problems rather than just yell and scream and hold news conferences?
Well, and Blaise, I don't know if I have the exact answer to your question, but I will say one of the things I do point out when people say to me, well, you never work together. You never work with people. You never work with the other side. And I'll say, actually, yeah, we do. And I literally just the other day, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, a Democrat brought me a bill, great bill. I'm signing on to it. We're going to work together on the bill. But that doesn't make headlines. And so people don't see that part of us actually working together. I mean, the tweets and the ugly tweets and the, little snippets always, make the press. And I always, because I'm older, and I always say, that's what sells newspapers. That's what's now yeah. There's no newspapers, but it's sometimes tough to explain to people. There are a lot of things that we are able to agree on, work together on. You just don't see those things because they're just not as exciting to report about.
Well, I think that's a good segue to something. Agriculture is usually a bipartisan issue. There's a lot of strength. Minnesota, it is still one of the issues that really brings thoughtful people together on conversations about the farm economy, what farmers need. And obviously the E15 task force, the recommendations for Congress. This is a little bit of a unique process, kind of calling the question. It just seemed like we're going to form a task force. There's going to be a tight deadline and we're going to make some decisions. Does that feel like a more efficient way to end years long of debate over this issue or any else?
You know, in some ways, they're it may be not as efficient because it's hard to call any legislative body efficient, but you know, helpful maybe or useful because you know we were sitting there with the idea was to put it in the bill, and it was left out of the bill, and so a couple of weeks ago, and so we put together the council because we sat in a room for hours trying to figure it out, but the small refineries were there, and both sides were there, and so we thought, you know what, this makes sense to take a few more weeks, and that's why we put a deadline on it, so it wasn't, you know, something that went on forever and ever. Put the deadline on it, it makes sense. And you know, one of the things we do when we meet is we listen to everybody so that we know what's going on to get that input. So I hate to call anything efficient, but you know, it certainly is useful because we understand better both sides, and I think that's going to put together a piece of legislation that people are going to be able to support.
Well, and I want to call that out because Friday the language dropped and we're still learning. We still have to pass it. It still has to get through the House and the Senate and the president. But, you know, farmers, farm country, vendors, trade partners have been waiting for the updated farm language, you know. And what is in this, A, related to E15 and biofuels, and then B, what are the next steps you see that are most effective?
Well, and I'm going to separate the two because the E15 council is still doing its job. And it is, as of today, is the deadline for the language. So yep. For the E15, that will probably come out sometime today. And but for the skinny farm bill, which is, you know, they're two separate issues right now. Skinny farm bill dropped, the language dropped on Friday morning. And a couple of things, I haven't had a chance to go through the entire thing yet, but investing in rural America, which is my legislation, is there. And that's going to allow for more capital in rural areas so that farm credit can provide more capital in those areas. Uniform pesticide labeling, which is something people were concerned about, is in there. The Prop 12 provisions are in there. And there's more flexibility for beginning farmers that are trying to access loans. So those are just a couple of the things that we've seen in there so far. And we'll continue to pursue that. My understanding is from the chair that they're going to have a full hearing in the Ag Committee on 23rd, 24, 25, somewhere in those few days. Okay. So let's hopefully talk about, that'll.
Yeah. You talked about beginning farmers, and this is a emerging topic. When I'm at Farm Fest, the years that I've covered ag, that we've covered ag as a firm, as people age, we want more people to get into farming. We want, how does that fit in your district? What do you hear from the farmers in your district, the families in your district? Because, you know, sometimes, I mean, the whole premise of us covering ag at Fluence was that people in the metro area were not getting ag data and information, and we had to make sure that it made it to the metro and the metro news made it to greater Minnesota. Where in your district is this important? Because there are a lot of folks who would like to live the rural lifestyle. They just don't have the family history in ag.
Well, and that is a big issue. You know, so number one, I'll say the estate or the death tax that was extended and double actually went up to 15 million in the One Big Beautiful Bill so that farmers can pass that on. So that's a family, you know, that's a family issue. So if a son does or son, daughter, whoever wants to take over the family farm, those estate taxes were eating into the entire, you know, into the land, into all the assets. So that's one thing. So we dealt with that in the One Big Beautiful Bill. But as for these, you know, flexible and more access to those loans, that's incredibly important because I've heard from others, you know, other particularly older farmers who say there's a young guy, not a relative, but there's a young guy who's been working on my farm who really wants to, you know, take over my farm. And we have to figure out a way to make that happen. So access to those loans, I mean, you know, land prices are incredible. So just that, and for those older farmers, a lot of their retirement, so to speak, is the land.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to make sure that everybody can do that. So making sure that they have that access, that they have the ability, you know, not only, you know, for that they can pass it on without incredible amounts of tax, you know, tax re- uh, problems, or we can make sure that we have those loans, those flexible loans and low interest loans, things like that, that we can help those young farmers get in.
When we talk about ag, one of the other big issues is trade. It was a topic this week with resolutions on trade with Canada. Obviously, this is complex. The economics are complex. The agreements are complex, and the relationship has gotten more complex. What do you hear from farmers in your district about trade, the importance of trade, and are there opportunities you see to kind of find some opportunities to create new markets?
Well, and, you know, and I think on a basic level, they understand, you know, that we have to do, you know, the president has to do some of these things with tariffs in order to, you know, in order to even the trading deals, you know, making sure that we're getting the fair trade that we want and making sure that we're not running the trade deficit that we have been. But, you know, and as for, you mentioned Canada, you know, we have the USMCA period coming up soon where we're going to be looking at that. And so there are some things that we absolutely need to address. You know, you look at making sure we've got the dairy issue,
yep.
You know, making sure that we've dealt with that, and then making sure that we deal with the turkey issue. So there's some, and the poultry issue. So there's some things in there that we're going to be watching and making sure that we get a fair deal on those. But that's it. They sure, you know, nobody wants to see the, you know, huge amounts of tariffs. But I think, like I said, I think they understand basically that this is the way. Very happy when China agreed to buy the soybeans, and we're making sure we're continuing to follow up, making sure that they fulfill that promise and that agreement. And so we're watching that. And I've talked to several of the folks over at U.S. Trade that they are going to be following up on that. And we'll talk to them, and they got to make sure they're doing their job that those soybeans get purchased. So lots going on there.
Yeah, no, obviously. And that's what I mean. It's complex. And I think that's one of those issues that going a few layers down to the dynamics of the ag economy is important, so that it's not just one lane. It's not just one market. There's multiple markets for Minnesota farmers. And I know they all had great crops, but when you don't have a market, they get a little nervous. And prices have certainly moved. It's only February, but it feels like we've had a year unto itself. It's an election year. You're running for re-election. What else do you hope Congress can get done this year before Congress adjourns for the political season?
Well, and we did absolutely, we mentioned E15, and that's, you know, and we have the council supposed to be done by the end of this month. Once that, the language does come out, we're supposed to have it on the floor. I believe it's by February 27th, if I'm remembering the date correctly, yep. But very quickly before March 1st. And so that's something that in my mind is an absolute, we have to get done. We've been waiting, we've been working for it. And so we need to make sure we get that done. Now, how it's going to get done is another issue. If it's going to be a standalone, if we're going to put it on a must pass, which is maybe the NDAA or the Surface Transportation Reauthorization, I don't know. You know, that's going to be some of the strategy once we figure, you know, get the text out. But so that, and, you know, so those other things, we have to do NDAA, and we've got right now, we've got, you know, the DHS question as to how that negotiations is going. And if that's going to be dealt with in the early next week, you know, or in the next few days. So the few things that are going on.
One of the kind of dynamics of contemporary Congress is this jump from continuing resolution to continuing resolution. Obviously, the Republicans have a very narrow majority. Is there a way in which, I know your colleagues hope for it, but hope is not always a strategy, we could strategically get back to a place where we are doing budgeting for the long term and in a much more kind of policy driven way rather than a jump to jump?
You know, I will disagree with you a little bit there, Blois, because you know what? We did pass 12 appropriations bills. We did the work. We did it this year. And there was, you know, the Appropriations Committee went through the whole process, not as quickly as we would have liked. But I will say that's the closest we've been to regular order since I've been there. And but I know that the Appropriations Committee under Chairman Tom Cole from Oklahoma is absolutely committed to getting back to that and doing it again. I would love to see us doing more than a one-year budget at a time. because that gets a little hairy. But I do think that we have made that step of doing all 12 of those budget bills. And that's huge, because they had to go through those and see what's going on. We all made our cases, you know, what we wanted to see in it, what we didn't want to see in it. So I think we are making those steps towards that.
My guest is Representative Michelle Fischbach. As we wrap here, you're on the Ways and Means Committee. The Ways and Means Committee is a very powerful, influential committee. As you look at the fiscal state of the U.S., are there flags that you think people should know more about regarding the budget, the fiscal state of the country, that maybe we don't get talked about because we're talking about all these other kind of hot button, you know, raise the flag issues about?
You know, I guess I think honestly, most folks probably know that inflation is going down and things are starting to, you know, take shape. Some of the legislation we passed is starting to actually take effect, like the One Big Beautiful Bill. I mean, that we are now in tax season. And I always say, I hate to say that it's good that people are paying their taxes, but they're going to see that relief now. And, you know, inflation is coming down. You know, we're also going into the future, we're also taking a look at what can we do about, you know, healthcare insurance? What can we do about, you know, some of those other things? Because those obviously came to play, you know, got a lot of talk
yep.
while we were talking about those enhanced subsidies for ACA. So there's a lot going on. Hopefully they'll see the difference in their tax bill, what the One Big Beautiful Bill will do, you know, because I think it really did, you know, you got the $6,000 deduction for folks on Social Security. You got the child tax credit. You got the, you know, the standardized deduction. So hopefully that will help. We're finally kind of will be seeing the results of that bill.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because it is one of those moments in tax season where everybody kind of scrambling to get their stuff together and they're trying to figure it out. And now that I have adult children who ask questions like that, I too am curious this year, for the first time in a long time, what all the changes mean. And I don't know if it's good curious or bad curious, but it's certainly curious. So there you go.
And just a little bit of trivia, because this is amusing.
Yeah.
You know what the busiest day for the IRS is? The Tuesday after President's Day. Because everybody spends those 3 days doing their taxes.
Yes. Well, that's this Tuesday. So here we go.
Yep. So everybody's going to be doing nobody's going to have any fun this weekend. They're all doing their taxes.
Well, thank God we have a little melt in the weather here. So at least people get outside a little. Representative Fischbach, thanks for joining me as always. And we'll kind of track this E15 issue as it goes through.
Yep, absolutely. It was great talking to you, and you have a good week.
When we come back, this week's take, we've had a year of news in 5 weeks. How are we going to get ready for the legislative session? That on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to The Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. This week's take is really about this upcoming legislative session. Legislators will gather Tuesday. On Tuesday, we'll also have the Minnesota Chamber Session Priorities Dinner, where legislative leaders will be. It's a certain kind of homecoming for the public affairs and business community in Minnesota. And what I would say to legislators of both sides, we still have a tie in the House. We still have a one seat Senate majority. All 201 seats are on the ballot this year. And we have a ton of retirements in the legislature. And so the dynamics of the legislature, the angles, the issues are going to be complex. But my message to legislators is keep it simple. Focus on what you can control to help Minnesota be more competitive, to help our economy, because resources are going to be slim. There will be a supplemental budget. There might be a tax bill. There might be a bonding bill. But Minnesota's economy is a little sluggish and has been. And we got to get people back to work, especially after the ICE presence. So as you think about how we go through session, don't let your emotions get the best of you. Try to be a policymaker and not an activist when you're at the Capitol. Try to focus on moving the needle just a little rather than throwing out any progress because you didn't get enough progress in your mind. When you look at the whole session and what needs to get done, it's a pretty limited agenda. You're all going to be on the ballot. You can run on whatever you want, and you should run on the accomplishments or some new ideas. Because as I've said with the governor's race, we need to have candidates who are talking about the future of Minnesota. I was at a panel on Friday with Leading Age Minnesota, a bipartisan panel with Nick Frentz and Joe Schumacher, Jordan Rasmussen, and Huldy Hetzby. And they all talked about kind of DHS and some of the issues there. Don't save any fixes there for the next governor. Push DHS to fix some stuff fast because it's clearly not working. And I'm not just talking about fraud. I'm talking about applications, bottlenecks, things like that. Bonding. We need to have some new technology available so that we have better computer systems in the counties and maybe even at the state. But we can't currently bond for technology. Seems like a simple tweak that Representative Rod Torkelson talked about a couple of weeks ago. And then let's dig in on any other aid regulations that can move us forward as a state. If we can agree to some smaller tweaks on things, we might build momentum to get away from this deadlock, gridlock. There's just parts that the state aren't working. And so now's a short session and try to do something to fix them. We'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. I'll be at the session priorities dinner. You can always sign up for our newsletters at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCA.